Hello and welcome to pod 31 of the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, which you can watch on eagles.cpfc.co.uk, the official Palace app, YouTube, and on all of our social media channels. Well, this is the first podcast for what seems like ages, and I think I lied the last time I did a pod. I think I said we were going to be back throughout the summer for other podcasts. That didn't happen. We've been very, very busy making a season review and loads of other bits and pieces. Obviously, we've had loads of transfers recently in that last week of the window. I hope you've been enjoying all the content that we've had. But yeah, here we are back on the podcast. And this week on it, we've got, obviously, Roy Hodgson's press conference, looking ahead to that trip to play against the Blades. We've also got an interview with Luka Milivojevic, which I did earlier this week. He signed a new four-year contract recently, but we chatted about loads of different stuff, non-football stuff, his favourite Serbian restaurants, hanging out with Mitrovic, things like that. Really interesting interview. Always good to talk to Luka. I caught up with Dan Blazer, who's the new editor of the Matchday programme, which was very interesting. And he's also filling in for Statman this week, who is away. And finally, or primarily, firstly on the podcast, Gary Cahill, new signing, joined on a free transfer, obviously most recently played for Chelsea. Here he is this week talking to Premier League Productions.
Let's start, Gary, by asking you what your impressions of Crystal Palace as a football club were before you joined here.
Before, there was, in my eyes, was a very solid Premier League side. They've been in the Premier League for many years now. And every time we played them, we had difficult games, home and away. I think away was very tough. The atmosphere was always loud here. I thought the fans were great. And yeah, my feelings for when we used to play, he used to be in a great shape, used to be very organised, and then he used to break on you. Obviously with natural pace on the wings, trickery on the wings, at a focal point up front, and for a defender, yeah, they were tough games.
So what was behind your decision to join here as a player?
Many things. I think you wait for the feeling to come where you just think, yeah, this is right for the next chapter. And I think there's an element of, first and foremost, the football club. Like I said, they've got some exciting players, a very solid Premier League team. The fans were fantastic when I played against them in terms of how they generate the noise. The manager I'd worked with before, the manager and Ray, I enjoy the way they work. I enjoy the way they see the game and the training, etc. Location, everything. It needed to be right so you can come with full motivation to give absolutely everything to move forward. And when you get that feeling that it's right, you know.
Knowing the manager, knowing Roy Hodgson, is that a huge advantage? Because obviously you've played with lots of managers over the years, ones that you didn't know so well and ones that you knew already. But this is an occasion where it's one that you've definitely worked closely with before.
Yeah, I mean, everything's an experience. Yeah, I've had many, many managers over, you know, club and country over my career. So you adapt and you see how they do things. But for me, it obviously would be easier to just drop into someone who you know how they work and you know how the expectation levels they have of you in training and games, etc. So I think in that aspect, it was slightly easier to adapt to the way they work. But, you know, everything's an experience. But, yeah, I was familiar with these before, obviously.
Has everyone made it easy for you to settle in? And are you already in that canteen scenario where you've got a group of players you're going to sit next to? Or?
No, it's weird. Everyone seems really close. They've been very welcoming. The squad seem very, very close. You know, great work ethic. You know, everyone's humble. There's no egos. It seems a really tight-knit group. So, you know, that's refreshing and really good to be a part of. It's weird because your first day in, it's like the first day at school. You're coming in, you don't know any of the staff. Obviously, you know the players because you played against them, but you don't know them as in know them. So it's all new. But no, I appreciate that the boys have took me in and they've made my first week or so very easy. So,
as someone I know likes to win football matches so much, how pleased were you to see Wilfried Zaha still here?
Yeah, selfishly. It was fantastic news for me and for the squad. So he's a special player. That's why, you know, teams are after him. I understand it's difficult in certain situations for him, especially so close to the start of the season. So I think mentally he's dealt with that phenomenally well. I've seen him train. He's trained fine. And, you know, obviously we're delighted that he's staying in this club because he could be the difference of them sort of players, the difference of drawing a game, winning a game. He's a fantastic footballer.
You spent so long at Chelsea. Did it feel like the right time to leave?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, for sure. I think, my time at Chelsea is forever grateful in terms of, you know, everything, the platform they give us to go out and perform. You know, the fans, the players, the staff. It's been great, great memories there. But everything comes to an end, and I think it was definitely the time. If you look at my appearances, you know, year after year after year of my career, my appearances are high, you know, year in, year out. Last year was almost non-existent. So the writing's on the wall there, it's time to go. And like I said, everything comes to an end. So it was amazing, my time there, loved it. And now it's the next chapter. I move on to the next chapter, and again, I go. I motivate myself to go and give everything for this football club now, which I'm can't wait.
So would it be fair to say that it was the high point and low point in your career? Because you won so much there, but it also must have ended feeling quite frustrated.
Yeah, I think exactly that. But I think more so you have to take, you know, the positives out of the situation. And over the average of my career at Chelsea has been totally successful and very enjoyable. So, but you can't sugarcoat last year. It was a disaster. It was not the way I wanted to end my career at that club. For whatever reason, it was a low point, like I just said, because football's all about playing. Football's all about being heavily involved in a club that you're at, which I've been lucky enough to do the majority of my career. And like I said, last year was like having your hands tied behind your back. So very, very difficult, probably more so that you inside than you saw. But again, listen, that would be like a Men in Black kind of erased out my memory in my career. I won't remember that. I'll remember the years before that. And like I said, they were very successful. So.
And you come here now and you've talked about prolonging your career. You've also spoken about this hunger that you've got, and I want you to talk me through that, where you are at right now as a player.
I think it's easy now for me to motivate myself and to be hungry, because all I have to do is flip my memory back to last year. And I think the things I've done before then, if you live for the present, you don't, you know, I can't play this season off the back of what I've done before. It's not, it doesn't work like that. And to motivate yourself, I've always looked slightly negatively, because it fires you up to go and however you want to call it, prove people right, prove yourself right, do whatever. And that's the way I find my motivation. So all the good things that I've achieved in my career, I'll enjoy when I finish. And then, you know, for my motivation this year, one, I want to help this group of players. It's a new group of players I've come in. You want to go out, you want them to say, whoa, you know, this guy can play. This guy's got personality, so... I want that. I want the fans to see, you know, that I can give everything for the team, and I want to try and, you know, help the club. And personally, I'll get my motivation from last year. Playing whatever it was a joke in my eyes in terms of that. So for me, I have every motivation to go out. I want to win football matches. I want to play at the top level, which is the Premier League, and I want to get back to the levels and the consistency that I've produced season after season. So. Like I said, last year was a blip, and I'll put this right in the next few years.
Now, I hear that you scored a pretty impressive goal today in training.
So have you got it on footage,
yeah,
please?
I hope so. Am I going to be seeing more Gary Cahill goals?
I don't know. I think, obviously, again, because last year, my hand was tired. I couldn't get out there. And over the years, I think my goals in terms of my career has been decent for a centre-back, so... I'd like to contribute in that way. I always think if you can get as a centre-back 5 goals in a season, anything around that mark is a good return. So, yeah, I would love to get that, you know. But first, I need to get in the team. I need to get back up and running. There's some competition here. There's many centre-backs here that are very experienced. So, all that being said, let's just get back out there and let's get back playing and with a smile on my face and a determination to win games.
Now, knowing the area of Sheffield as well as you do...
Yep.
I know it will mean a lot for you to be able to be playing Sheffield United in the first place in the top flight.
Yeah, it will, obviously from, you know, just outside there. So I know the teams and stuff well, followed them over the years. And to be fair, it's great that we've got a team now in the Premier League, and they deserved it off the back of last year. The manager there has done a phenomenal job in terms of not just getting them up, but the style they play, the way they play, I think has been unbelievable. So... It'll be a great game. It'll be an unbelievable atmosphere. I know that for sure. The fans are great. I had 3 months there when I was young, under Brian Wilson and Brian Kidd, and they was good times. So the atmosphere will be massive, and they did so well at home last year, so it'll be a very tough game, very tough game.
Chris Wilder, do you know much about him?
Only, I don't know him personally, but just from what I've seen, and like I said, I think the way that he's, or what he's done with that, what, that team and the club, seems great, seems amazing, and like I said, not just the results that they produced, they've been strong at home last year with a phenomenal at home. And the style of play. I think the fans enjoy watching them play. And I don't see that changing at the weekend. I think they'll go exactly, you know, toe-to-toe, and especially with the crowd behind them, it'll be, like I said, it'll be a tough game, but a great game.
Someone you will know pretty well, Phil Jagielka.
Yeah.
And so is he going to have a massive influence on their dressing room, do you think?
I think so. He's a great guy. Great guy. Great professional. Great player. Oh, he's a fantastic player. Very, very experienced. And yeah, that signing did not surprise me whatsoever. I think that'd be a great addition to their squad on and off the pitch. So,
for them, is it about staying in the Premier League, do you think? And is that the similar battle that you think you're in here, or is it a different one?
I think you have to be aware of that. I don't feel that I'm in that battle here, but I think you have to be aware of it as well. But yeah, going back to Sheffield United, I think that's obviously their aim. You know, let's be honest, I think to stay in the league will be a fantastic achievement for them. Like I said, it wouldn't surprise me with the way that they work, and it looks like they've got a great bunch there in terms of the way they work for each other. They work super hard, and the shape and everything is tricky to play against.
Gary Cahill there, talking to Premier League Productions. And now, in the absence of Statman this week, because he's off on holiday somewhere, I probably should have booked him in earlier, sent him a text this morning, and he told me he's in Jersey. That's the kind of organisation I go for here on the podcast. But this week, I thought I'd get in the new programme editor, Dan Blazer. Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Chris. I've looked through the windows of the media centre of MV at you and Statman, so it's an honour to finally be the other side of that glass.
Okay, well, you're not going to be Statman today, though, are you? You're just going to be Dan. I want to talk about the programme first before we delve into the Blades. Delving into the Blades is probably what you want to do right now, you know?
Absolutely.
Nervous?
Yeah, a little bit nervous, got the butterflies. Okay. Big moment. But, yeah, so I'm sure fans saw last season we ran a survey across the site for a couple of months, asking fans what they wanted to see in the programme, what they didn't like, any changes, any feedback. And whether you believe me or not, I went through every single comment, every single result, and worked this summer with the designers and with the content team in producing, hopefully, more of a type of programme that the fans would like to pick up at Selhurst Park. The main feedback was that fans felt that the programme gave them information that they already knew about, you know, 24/7 media age, we've got the app, we've got the website, the video channel. We weren't necessarily giving them stuff that they didn't already know. There was no real reason to grab it, you weren't going to get something new. So we've done away with the old match reports from the under-18s, the under-23s, the first team, and this year we've given a column to the under-23s, under-18s and the ladies team, which each week will alternate between Richard Shaw and Paddy McCarthy, where they talk about how the squad's going, the players, the results, very much like you'd see from Roy and Luca at the front of the programme. And the ladies team, we had Dean Davenport, the manager for the first one, but going forward it will be the new players. I'm talking to Lita Rutherford, who joined over the summer for the Aston Villa programme, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. Then what the fans did enjoy a lot was the historical content. They liked the throwback. So things like, we had like Neil Everett's archive footage, obviously the club photographer for 40 years. That stayed. And then this year, Dom Fifield has remained with us, and he'll be previewing each week the 89-90 season. So,
oh, nice.
Yes,
good season, that.
Yes, very good season. Obviously, last year the programme went through the promotion years, the glory years, so 68-69 and so on and so forth. But yeah, Dom's looking back at that first time back in at the most recent promotion. A piece that I enjoy doing as well is one called The Corner of South London, where we go out into the community because we've got such a vibrant, exciting, you know, Norwood High Street. So the first one of that went live in the Everton programme. We spoke to Community Caf, slightly different, you know, it's away from the football. Fascinating interview talking to this this Reams, the lady who set it up, this charity that looks to give migrant women a chance in business via the front of the community caf down Nord High Street, where she hosts events and things like that. In terms of design, we went more for that coffee table magazine that you like to pick up, you know.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
Yeah, I've got to say our designers and Bill and Luke, you know, little name check there for the boys. I've done a great job, absolutely delighted, and I hope the fans are too. And we've already seen more subscriptions, more program sales at the home for the opening game against Everton than compared to last season. So the response so far, I feel it is good and it's positive, but you know, feedback's always welcome. So
what are the demographics of program readers? So, I used to read it as a kid, but I don't know whether the kids still read it.
Yeah, so in terms of our feedback, I've got to say a lot of the feedback was from the older fans.
Probably the only ones that can be bothered to fill in a survey, though. Right?
Yeah, that
got
is
a lot
true.
Of time on their hands.
That's the sort of, you know, it's about finding that balance. We want to, you know, re-energise, by reinvigorate the younger fans to pick up a programme, while also not sidelining, you know, the loyal buyers that we have. And also, I've got to say, look, we did this. We've got this new section, Fancy Fives, where we ask all the players for their dream five-a-side team, maybe on players they've played against, players they've played for. But Mamadou Sakho's is unreal. I reckon it would beat any of the other lads.
Five-a-side players he's played with.
Players he played with at PSG.
When's that dropping?
I'm not sure when I'm going to put that one in, but I'm going to have to do it soon now, I reckon.
Yeah, you've got loads of stuff done in advance, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, it was good. Like the media day was my first experience of that, and that was great. I got down a lot of stuff. You know, our junior Eagle section, we have advice for youngsters looking to make it from the players, so I managed to get a lot of them in the bank. And yeah, Fantasy Five. Scott Dan took the longest. His was centre backs from, I think, the Premier League era, or maybe when he was playing, but very hard. A lot of good options out there. So
yeah, they don't like leaving people out, do they?
No,
especially
they don't.
If it's people they know.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I'm not sure Vincent Kompany will be reading the Crystal Palace matchday programme.
You never know.
But if he does, he can take it up with Scott himself.
So, for those who don't know, when did you join the club?
So I joined back in March, actually.
So the first few couple of months for you towards the end of the season were just kind of keeping with the way things were done in the programme, and over that time giving yourself an idea of what you wanted to bring in and what you wanted to keep.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I joined at quite a good time. We had an international break, so obviously, as well as the programme, working on the website, so there's a lot to take in. But yeah, I was getting up to speed with Johnny, the previous programme editor, you know, what was mapped out for the rest of the season, chatting to the designers about, you know, their capabilities, because I'm a novice when it comes to that. We don't know if I'm asking a silly request or something that's easy for them. And then, yeah, the survey was sort of the first thing that I did to really sort of gauge where we wanted to take it. I had my own ideas, but there's no point going down that path by myself, and you know, sort of found a nice compromise with what the fans wanted and also sort of my idea of where I wanted to go with it.
Bit of a nerdy question. When you plan how it looks, do you have in your mind how it's going to look as a printed programme or as a digital programme, or which one?
Definitely the hard copy, I'd say. I mean, you can get... The way it works is that I end up dealing with or producing tens of Word documents with, you know, thousands of words of copy, and it amazes me each week that I put that into this folder and then I end up with these printouts on my table of the designers who have put it all together in the Photoshop, and it's incredible. I still can't, you know, design wise, I think we've got some of the best in the business, and comparing it to other Premier League programs, I think we're lucky to have the guys that we've got.
Because the guys we've got, they're doing everything. I mean, they're designing the programme, they're designing signs around the stadium, they're designing kits.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, they are so busy. It's a team of two, and, you know, we love, obviously, a match at Selhurst Park, but we could have done without the home clash against Colchester 3 days before producing another programme for Villa, but, you know...
And that's the point. Do I need to do a column for that?
Yes, you will. Oh, yes, and your column. Sorry, I didn't even reference your new edition. This is basically why I'm on, isn't it? To be like, how brilliant that is.
You don't have to talk about that, it's fine. Steve Brout's got a column, though. I saw him in the bio, he said you cut a couple of his jokes out.
There was jokes in there?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry. I didn't realise. Sorry about that, Stephen, if you're listening.
If you could put the jokes in red next
okay,
time.
Yeah.
And then we'll
laugh here, maybe. Yeah, just okay. To follow that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, that's really good, though. I mean, Stephen is... I really enjoy reading his pieces because, you know, I've only just got involved with a football club sort of 3-4 months ago. I haven't been to these stadiums, and that's part of the job, part of the reason I love this job, is I get to go to these grounds now. But hearing about them in advance and what to do, and yeah, his knowledge of breweries and pubs is very good. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that column progresses throughout the season.
So just to finish off on the programme bit, first, on a match day, how much is the programme for those that have never read a programme, and also how can you get it digitally?
So £3.50 for hard copies, and we've also got card readers. A few of them, we're testing them out this year, dotted around. So hopefully, you know, I appreciate loose change is a dying thing. So, you know, don't be afraid to get your card out. We've got card readers out. Digitally, it will go live 24 hours before kickoff, which will be available to buy online at the website for £1.99. And as soon as you buy it, that will go straight into your, you know, your email inbox. You can read it on your phone, your tablet, or your laptop. There was the option to buy the digital subscription for the season for £30, where you get all the Premier League home games, but that's now not available. So yeah, digitally, it's £1.99, 24 hours before everyone else, basically.
Pretty good. So that's it for the programme. Right, Sheffield United away on Sunday.
I am becoming Statman.
Yeah, you are Statman. I'm not working it, so I haven't done any research. Tell me about Sheffield United.
Well, I'll have you know, Chris, this is our first Premier League clash with them since the debut year of the competition, 92-93.
Ah, okay.
A stat that I do enjoy is that we beat them twice that year, never conceded. But in the second game, that's more impressive because in the 39th minute, Chris Armstrong got sent off. 5 minutes later, Chris Coleman scored and we held on with 10 men for over a half.
Fantastic.
So, you know, if we can read into a result from 27 years ago, yeah. And we shall.
That's yeah, we let's do that because you know, stats are pointless anyway. But
stats are
pointless.
And continuing in that form, in 18 games away for London teams in the Premier League, up at Bramall Lane, only 3 times have the London team emerged victorious. So it's a bit of a bear pit for us, people heading up from the capital.
I like bear pit. I like that.
But yes, I was a bit nervous about saying it.
Yeah, you can say that. It's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. But so that would be, you know, Palace are obviously one of those 3 teams that have done it before, 27 years ago. Mm-hmm. So you know, can we become the make it our second win up there. But the omens are good for us. Only Man City have scored more goals away from home in the Premier League with their 24. We've got 20 in 2019. Wolves got 6 in 7 in his last... 6 in 7 last away games.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, you can't catch me out there. Roy's just said in his presser, that I'm sure you will listen to, that Wolf is, you know, he's available.
Wolf scored a ridiculous goal in training today.
Yeah.
I'm going to plug myself again. I've been filming training this week. I've been the
You've
cameraman.
You've enjoyed it, actually.
I've been the cameraman, yeah.
I've got to say, Chris came in this morning and there was like a... I thought you had new glasses.
Because I knew I was going to film training again.
But yeah, training's giving you a bit of like a bit of colour back into your face.
Thank it's you, Roy. Yeah, thanks. And along with the fake tan.
Yep. And Roy, and obviously Roy's still on course to better Alan Pardew's record. You know, he could have got it last week in our opening one against Everton. But if he gets the win, whenever it comes, hopefully this Sunday, it will be his 26th win in the league with Palace in his 74th Premier League game with us, so overtaking Pardew's wins record there. So, you know, badge of honour for Roy.
Yep, we'll let Alan know.
Yes.
I'm sure he'll be delighted.
Get him on the podcast next week.
Yeah.
I'd love it.
What else you got? Is that it?
I should have done a bit more. I should have listened to previous episodes to see how Rob and me, sorry.
You mean you've never listened to the podcast?
Too busy, mate, too busy.
Actually, yeah, but people that do listen, remember to subscribe, tell your friends about it, because it's really hard to spread the word about podcasts. It's one of those strange mediums that everyone finds out from a friend, don't they?
Yes. Sort of related to Sheffield United, Statman, but I was looking at the Everton game earlier, and Andros Townsend, because I was looking at my fantasy football about what to do, and Andros attempted the most dribbles and the most crosses against Everton. Found that quite, you know, if Wilf's coming back into the team, potentially Andros might pick up an assist or two there.
Yep, fantastic. Well, my prediction then. What are you predicting? You're travelling up to the game. You're doing my post-match duties.
Yes, I know.
Debuting.
Yeah, it's been quite a nervy debut week for me. Under the bus in the podcast 10 minutes before.
And then I let everyone know that I was at a stag do this weekend. So
yeah, paintballing as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so. Paintballing, yeah. So
I don't want, you know, I don't want to go cliche, but I feel like it's going to be tough. It's going to be... Sheffield United do play good football, but I was reading that, you know, it's a fully British English team that Chris Wilder had selected in the first game. First time, I think, since Norwich did it, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Can't quite remember. It's going to be tough. I think not many goals. I think we nick it 1-0, Wilf.
Don't they play some ridiculous formation where the centre-backs overlap?
Yeah, I was listening to this the other day.
I don't know if they do or whether it's one of those things that's just got around and everyone's heard from someone. Do you know that Sheffield
Well, apparently they didn't do it when they drew with Bournemouth. So whether that's because they didn't get a chance to do this mental formation or it's actually just an urban myth that's travelled around and overlapping. I don't know how that works. I don't understand.
This is all someone said. They have three at the back. The two wider centre-backs overlap the full-backs when they're going forward and then defensive midfielders drop in.
Sounds pretty gung-ho.
Yeah, it could be made up. It could be a myth. We'll do more research next time. So that's it.
That's it.
Well,
I don't know,
thanks for that information on the programme. I read it the other day.
Just your column?
No, I'd already read that.
And laughed yourself.
No, I even enjoyed it. I think it looks amazing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. Like I said, feedback's still very much welcome. We have a designated programme email address, which is programme@cpfc.co.uk. Please do get in touch with, you know, positives, negatives. And
Do people let you know about typos via email?
No, that's so we have. I have a hashtag set up, which is like CPFC program on Twitter, and I nervously search that on match days, just praying that I don't see anything really. But
it's nothing worse than what we find it annoying on video, Vimeo, which we use to upload the videos on the app on the website. It's fine because you can replace the video file if you notice a mistake.
Yeah.
YouTube is there forever. If you take it down, you lose the views. You have to put a new one. So there's like a video we did on Aaron Wan-Bissaka, the making of him, and there's a date wrong on it. It has his debut as like 2017 or something, yeah. And it was 2018, and it's there forever now.
It's devastating as well because especially with like the Everton programme, it was transfer deadline week. So obviously we had Gary come in, we had Victor and James. It's just me and the programme editor and my colleague Ben working on it, but we're also trying to do all the stuff for the signing announcements, the design team, which is again just two lads trying to do the programme of 80 pages plus the, you know, the social graphics, etc., for the announcements, for the emails, and the deadline from the printers is the same time the transfer window closes, and it was just chaos. And you've worked so hard, and then the only tweet you see about it is, "Oh, you spelled preview wrong," which I did.
Yeah, and the other one, which you couldn't be helped. Which was the back page, because that went to print on the Tuesday.
Yes, back page. Yeah,
so James McCarthy hadn't left Everton and joined Palace at that point.
Yeah, and Everton hadn't updated their squad list, couldn't get hold of their media man to confirm the new squad list, so the numbers are all over the show. So yeah, all in all, a good solid start.
Yeah, and then I put out a Friends Reunited video, but which was ironic, but I'm going to talk about that in my next column.
You are, excellent. Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed it, and I was very much in on the... This is brilliant.
Yeah, it was supposed to be bad. That was the whole point. It was taking the mick out of other clubs that try too hard, but it didn't land.
I enjoyed it.
That's it. I'm sure I said that's it already.
You have, yes.
Yes. Thank you very much for joining me.
Okay,
yeah, an encore. Thanks for joining. And now next up, here is an interview I did with Luka Milivojevic. Earlier in the week, we talked about loads of different stuff, and it was because he's just signed a new 4-year deal with the club. Long live Luka. Luka, how happy are you to have signed a new contract at Palace?
I must be very happy, of course. Very delighted to sign, very delighted to continue to play for this great club. I have to thanks, first of all, to the chairman. I'm delighted that I'm going to continue work with Roy Hodgson, great manager and great man. And as well, very happy because I will be in the same dressing room for next, I hope, 4 years. Where I must say, we have a very good group of the players, and I'm so happy that I will continue to work with them.
What do you love about Crystal Palace, about the club?
One of the biggest parts is our stadium, Selhurst. One of the reasons I sign is to play in front of these great fans. It's not because I'm in Palace, but in my opinion, we have the best fans. And it will be amazing to keep going and playing for them and try to do the best for the club and for great fans.
You're captain of the team. How different is it being captain to just being a player?
You know, I'm captain because Roy, the manager, decided 1 year and a half ago, I think. But I must say that in our dressing room we have many, many players who can be the captain as well. A lot of good characters in the dressing room, a lot of players with good mentality. At the moment I am the captain because manager decide, but I'm very happy that I have in dressing room players who can as well be the captain because we try all together to reach our aims and to do our best for the club. And you know, when you have a lot of characters who are similar to you, it's much easier to achieve something.
You only joined the club about 2.5 years ago, wasn't it? January 2017. It feels like you've been here for so much longer. Did you feel at home straight away when you joined?
It's not straight away. I didn't feel. I tried to adapt as soon as possible. Of course, the guys helped me to adapt easier. When I came, 3 days after, I played first game. That's the best way to adapt in one team, to play, to try to get good result, and then with that positive mood you continue to the next week. That was my case when I came, and in my opinion the best way to adapt. 2.5 years ago in my head it looked like happened yesterday, you know, but time is go fast. I'm happy, as I said, and I hope I will continue to do my best for this club.
What's it like for a player when you come over to a brand new country, you land and you're chatting about contracts, and then you've got someone like me asking you questions in a language, different language? Is it stressful?
Well, no, it's not stressful. You have to adapt. You know, I played in, if I don't count Serbia, I play in 3 different countries. I try in all countries to give my best to adapt quick as possible. And, you know, here is different. Here the organization, the league, the football is on the top level, and maybe it's different, maybe more difficult, but in the other hand is the most beautiful place to play.
Is it difficult for your family when you've moved around so much?
That's the most difficult part of movement from one club to the other, in my case. Yeah, family, especially if you have kids, they go to school, then you need to take them out of the school, change their friends, country, place, home. That's a little bit difficult, but you know, we are all human beings and we adapt easily. Someone adapts very easy, someone needs time, but in the end we all adapt.
And what do you think of London as a city?
Great city. I'm so happy that I'm in London. We are enjoying these 2.5 years, to be honest. The city is amazing. A lot of options for us, for kids, for families, so happy.
And you got obviously you've got photos with Mitrovic. Do you see him quite a lot outside of football?
Not that much, but yeah, when we have free time, because I have a lot of to do in my team, he has in his team, and you know, when we all have some free time, we are going for dinner, we try to meet, to talk about football, talk about many things in between us, and great moments to spend with one of the best friends, you know, I have. And I'm happy that I have him in Belgium. Now here is much easier for me and especially for my family. We have someone to who we can talk Serbian, which for us is important. And for me is important as a parent of my kids to speak both languages. And that's as well one good reason.
I went to a Serbian cafe with Saša Ćirčić before. Is there anywhere in London any good Serbian restaurants that you'd recommend?
The one I go most of the times, the name is Fulham Kitchen. The restaurant is in Fulham, next to the Fulham Stadium. The food is amazing. You can go for nice coffee, you can spend nice time, and you can see the jerseys of some Serbian players. It's a nice place to go and spend some time.
So what's Serbian food? What's traditional Serbian food?
It's very hard to translate on English the some dishes. But it's with a lot of meat, vegetables, let's say similar to Greek food.
What would you think of English food? If you had fish and chips?
Not really.
It's not very healthy.
Okay, it's not healthy, but I didn't try that much.
Roast dinner? It's no. Like a Sunday roast. You have like chicken, beef.
This is what I like, but this is you can find in every country.
Yeah,
beef,
true.
Chicken, yeah, kind of meat.
British food's a bit boring, isn't it? It's just from all around the world.
What I love here from the food is you can find a lot of good places, English restaurants with very nice steaks. And steak is something what I really love to eat. It's healthy and is good for us as a professional football players.
Do you watch any English TV?
No, TV, I very, very rare I watch TV. And even newspapers, TV, just some movies. With kids sometimes, when they put something on TV with them, I spend time. But the most of what I watch on TV, if I watch, is football.
So how do players, so the fans consume football, they watch videos online or they read newspapers. How do you read about, where do you read about football? In English newspapers or in Serbian?
No, I have few Serbian website, good websites where they cover football in whole Europe. You can read every single day new news about every single league in Europe. This is where I read. And on the TV all the time I'm watching football. I think my wife one day gonna kill me. Because all the day, Saturday we finish the game, Sunday is recovery day. I'm all day at home from 1 in the afternoon until I think 8, 9 in the evening I'm watching football.
And when you do interviews, do you ever see that they've taken what you said and they've taken it out of context?
Well, it happened many times.
Yeah.
It happened in my career many times, especially in my country. But what you can do? You decide to who you're going to speak, to who you will not speak. And, you know, when people show you respect, when they put in public what you say, video is very simple. This is from your mouth, from your head, and you give to the people your opinion. The difference is very hard when you give someone to the microphone who is recording the interview and then they write in the newspapers. In that moment is a little bit tricky to put everything what you say, because people from media, you love to put something on your own, some stuff, and maybe some players go mad, some players are happy. Depend of the moment and depend of the person.
And as captain, you do a lot more interviews after games than anyone else, because it's always the way. If the team loses, then the easiest person to go to is the captain. Do you ever get tired of just answering the same questions, and at the same time you're really tired after playing the game as well?
I hate to give interview after losing, because what I can say, people see on the stadium or on the TV one team who lost, I don't know, 2-0, 3-0, let's say, and now I have to go out and give some explanation. There is no explanation. The explanation must be on the pitch. And in the end of the game I try to give my opinion about the game, and maybe what we should do better and what we can do better in future. But in the end, whatever I said, they will have in their head that we lost 2-3-0, and whatever you say, they don't care.
Yeah, I hate asking the questions after a defeat as well.
Then can you imagine me? I hate to answer on your questions.
Okay, well, let's just smile.
don't go there.
And finally, few signings joined last week. Two of them in midfield. How good is it for you guys to have so much competition in central midfield?
But the most important for one team, if you have competition, then they provoke you to give more. You know, someone is in your back. If you don't perform well, even on training, they can replace you, and you try to keep your position. You try to do your best, and it's good for us as a team because we can just grow. I think very good signings. I think good players. In future, they will show, I think, why we signed them.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Luka Milivojevic there. And now, next up, it's Roy Hodgson's press conference. This one a little bit shorter than usual. Basically, what happened is Sky Sports and Premier League were both interviewing Gary Cahill around the same time that the press conference started, which meant that their reporters weren't in the room. So the whole press conference is done by Pete from BBC London, who normally is about third or fourth asking questions in the press conference. But this time, the press conference was all his.
Quite strange for me, but I start with team news then.
Yeah, nothing special. I mean, apart from the fact that we recovered Jeffrey Schlupp, which is a fine piece of news, really. But he's now recovered from the injury he picked up when we played Bristol City, I think, early on in the game. So he's recovered from that, so that's an extra player. And the players we don't have are Mamadou Sakho and James Tomkins, who are still recovering from their injuries.
What's it like for you to have such an abundance of talent to pick from at the moment?
Yeah, it's good to have such a big squad. It's been much better considering how it was for us in the pre-season. Obviously, until Mamadou Sakho and James Tomkins return, we aren't as well covered at the back as we are in the midfield and up front. But at least we're getting there now, and the squad is beginning to look a bit more like it should be looking, and I'm getting the alternatives, if you like, or the options, which we all as managers like to have.
Did the new boys come through unscathed?
Yeah, they've come through well. I mean, they've now completed, in the case of Victor and James McCarthy, they've now done about 7 or 8 days training with us. Gary's done slightly more. Gary's probably done getting on for 2 weeks training with us now, and Wilf the same. So all the people that we are missing, Cech Kwiatkowski, all these people that we are waiting on, they're getting training sessions, they're getting training minutes behind them. And in actual fact, the game with the under-23s that we had on Tuesday of this week gave me a chance to let some of those boys play 90 minutes football, which in the case of people like James McCarthy and Gary Cahill, it's a while since they've done that.
First away game of the season. Last season's away form was terrific, to say the least. 9 wins. What did you put that down to? There was such a difference between playing at Selhurst and playing on the road.
Well, it's to do with how open the game gets and the type of players that we have, who are really quite suited, if you like, to a counter-attacking game. When the opponents, they come forward and leave spaces behind, we're quite good at exploiting those spaces. And sometimes at Selhurst Park, because the players and the team has done quite well and you build up a reputation as being a hard team to beat, sometimes the teams that come here are maybe a little bit more prudent in the way they approach the game than they are when they play us at home. So it might just be as simple as that, but we think that there are more goals in the team than we were able to show last year, and it's up to the players who are our front players and our goal scorers to show that. I think as the season wore on, we became better at scoring goals and taking our chances, and I'm hoping that's going to continue and get even better this season.
Is there going to be a concern of yours then that teams might know how to play Palace on the road now when they come visiting?
I always work on the basis that the opponents will do the same type of preparation and the same type of research into their opponent as we do for our opponent. So I'm always expecting the teams we play to have done their homework, done their research, and to know exactly what they need to do to stop us and to cause us problems. And, you know, my respect, if you like, for the Premier League and Premier League managers and coaches goes as far as that. So I always expect that it's going to be hard for us to do what we want to do, because the opponents will be aware of it and be ready for it. And all we can do is to get better and better at the things we do so that you thwart their attempts to stop you.
Chris Wilder did a remarkable job up at Sheffield United last year to get them up. What do you make of what he's achieved there? Because he spent most of his football in the lower leagues.
Well, not only that has any bearing on how he is capable or his capabilities as a coach today, where he's spent his playing or coaching career, that doesn't interest me as such. What interests me more is what he's done since he's got to Sheffield United with the two, I think they're successive promotions, aren't they? Or, I mean, that's an incredible record to have successive promotions. And the fact that his team play the football that they play, which is obviously a football which is going to ask a lot of questions of all the opponents that they meet, he needs a lot of credit for that, and has, I think, received a lot of credit for it, because he's received a trophy at the end of last season, which made him the LMA Manager of the Year, and that's voted for by peers rather than by mass media or sponsors. So I think that's the highest accolade you can receive at the end of a season, that your peers vote you as the man who's been the Manager of the Year. So that says everything. It must be an achievement he's proud of. But it speaks volumes, of course, for the work he's done, because you don't get that award unless people, you know, really respect the work you've done.
Then how refreshing to see managers of his, dare I say it, age, like Steve Bruce as well, getting into the Premier League, whereas we're always talking about young English managers?
I don't know if I understand the question, Pete, sorry.
Well, what I'm saying, he's over 50, Chris.
Whereas he's a young man, you mean?
To you and me, Roy, yeah. A young manager like Chris, then getting in his first chance at 50, whereas we're always talking in the media about young English managers.
Yes,
like Frank Lampard.
Well, luckily I don't work for the media, so I don't have to talk about young or old managers. I can just talk about football and football managers and people who work in the game. I've got to say, I had no idea what age he is, because it's something which is totally irrelevant to me. And as is the young manager v old manager, I think it should be quite simple: good manager or bad manager. And age really has got nothing to do with it, as Mourinho proved at a very young age by piling up all the trophies that he did, and that's been carried on by people like Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp. But there's examples on the other side. One you've just given me, the old man Wilder, he's doing well.